Gibbs, founder of Incandescent Public Relations, publisher of Being Incandescent Business Magazine, and your host for the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs.
Gretchen Rubin was clerking for Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor when she realized that what she really wanted to be was a writer. Since then, she has written several books, including the best-selling 40 Ways to Look at Winston Churchill, and her uber-popular bestseller, The Happiness Project, which is what we're going to be talking with her today. So the subtitle is, well, why I spent a year trying to sing in the morning, clean my closet, fight right, read Aristotle, and generally have more fun, which is so cool. Thank you for being on the show, Gretchen.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to be talking to you.
So before we jump into our Q&A, I want to tell our listeners a little bit more about you. First, a friend of mine, Dan Pink, he said of your book, this is a rare book that will make you both smile and think, often on the same page. And I absolutely felt the same way. So we want to talk to you about the book, what inspired you to write it, and what you're working on now. So let's get started. The Happiness Project, you talk about this epiphany you had one rainy afternoon on a city bus. Tell us about that moment in time.
You know, it was just this very, very ordinary moment. It was pouring rain. I was on a city bus that was moving very slowly. And I looked out the window and I thought, what do I want from life anyway? And, because often in sort of the rush of everyday life, you don't have the opportunity to step back and ask yourself these sort of big transcendent questions. But I did. And I thought, well, I want to be happy. But I realized, you know, I didn't spend any time thinking about whether I was happy or if I could be happier. And in a flash, I decided, you know, I should have a happiness project. And that was the phrase that occurred to me. And I went out the next day to the library, got a huge stack of books, and started researching happiness. I wanted to know, what does everybody say about whether you can make yourself happier or how to make yourself happier? And I wanted to try everything out and see if it really worked. And at first, it was just going to be for me. I was finishing up a biography of Kennedy, and this was just something I was doing for fun for myself. But then I realized it was such deep, rich, fascinating material. I was spending more and more time on it, going deeper and deeper, that finally I thought, you know, maybe this should be my next book. Because this question of, like, you know, can you make yourself happier? And if so, how can you make yourself happier? Is just really, really compelling.
And in the 12 months that ensued, you just had all these incredible adventures. And month by month, you take us through your path. So can you share some, like, boosting your energy in January, getting serious about play in May?
Well, what I decided to do is I figured that a year was a long enough time for real change to happen, but short enough that it felt manageable. And, you know, so there's the 12 months of the year and month. And so I decided, well, I would figure out what were the elements of my life that contributed most to my happiness and that I felt needed, that I wanted special focus on. So, for example, something that a lot of people, I think, would include in their happiness project would be adventure. But I'm not a very adventurous person. So that was not something that I put into my happiness project, but other people might well put into their happiness project. But as you say, like, I decided to start my happiness project with energy because I figured, you know, if I had more energy, then everything else that would follow would feel easier. And indeed, I think that's very much the case with all of us, that when you're feeling overwhelmed and you're feeling drained, it's very hard to take the time to do things even that you know are going to make you happier. You know it would be really fun to throw a Super Bowl party. But if you're exhausted, you just can't face it. You can't handle the errands. You can't handle the logistics. You just don't do it, even though you know in the end it would be something that would be happier. So I started with energy and thought of, well, what are some concrete, manageable changes I could make in my life that would boost my energy? And so I did that with energy. I did that with marriage. I did it with work and with play, as you mentioned, parenthood, because I have two daughters. You know, just sort of a lot of different aspects of my life that I really wanted to focus on. And, you know, and just figuring those things out was actually a really helpful intellectual exercise. You know, if you were going to pick the 12 things in your life that you want to work on, you know, your list would look very different from my list, but just identifying that list was really, really useful.
Was there one month where you were really challenged and another month when you found yourself to be really happy?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think all of them were challenging and that I was picking things where I wanted to make a change or I wanted to do something differently. You know, and sometimes it's sort of hard to put your finger on whether something's easy or hard. For example, going to bed on time. I'm always thinking, like, is that hard or is that easy? Because how hard is it to go to bed on time? But in practice, it's kind of hard. It's not that it's so difficult to do it, but you've got to make up your mind to do it and stick to it. And so some things were easy and very fun and big payoffs. So one of mine was to kiss my husband every morning and every night. That's very easy. That's very nice. And that I love that resolution. And then, you know, but then all of them, anyway, I was expecting more for myself. And I think this is one thing that's very interesting with the Happiness Project is you want to accept yourself, which is a key to happiness, but you also want to expect more from yourself. And so I think a lot of times it's figuring out, well, where is that fine line between what's just the natural limitations of your nature and then where are the places where you could expect more. So one of the things I really worked on was being a better parent. Like I was losing my temper too quickly. Apparently I make this very terrifying, mean face. And I wanted to be more tender, more attentive, more silly. And so a lot of the resolutions I did were around that, to try to have a kind of a different atmosphere in our home. And I think it really did make a big difference, you know, to me and to my family. Because when I lighten up, they lighten up too. So there were a lot of ways in which it really paid off that way.
You know, one question that really pops to my mind is, what does it mean to be happy? How do we define happiness? And as you said, it's so personal, but how do you define it?
Well, this is the thing. You mentioned that I started out my career in law, and I have happy memories of spending an entire semester arguing about the definition of contract. And if anything, happiness is more elusive. There are like 15 academic definitions of happiness. And you can spend a lot of time arguing about contentment versus bliss versus satisfaction versus peace versus joy. And I just feel like for most people, it's not that helpful to really worry so much about what is happiness. And it's actually easier to think about being happier. It's not about like a perfect definition or a perfect destination, but about a process and about the direction you're moving in. And so even if you don't know exactly what happiness is, you can say to yourself, look, would this make me happier? If I imitate a spiritual master, would that make me happier next week, next month, next year? Would it push me in the right direction? And I think that's really what we're interested in. That's really what matters. Because I think when you start focusing on happiness, it's kind of like, well, what exactly would that be? And how would you get there? And how would you stay there? Which is, to me, kind of very hard to grasp. So I just always think about being happier, whatever that means.
That makes sense to me. And you put some interesting scientific research on the power and importance of being happy. So beyond the definition, there's actually things that our brain does when we're happier.
Happier people are more resilient, they're more creative, they make better team members and better leaders, they're healthier, they have better habits, they're more altruistic, they tend to give away more money and volunteer more time, they're more likely to help out if a family member or a colleague or a friend needs a hand. It turns out that when, you know, it's funny, happiness has kind of a bad reputation with some people, and some people worry that it's selfish to want to be happier. But in fact, research shows that happy people, they have the emotional wherewithal to turn outward and to think about other people and the problems of the world and what's going on around them, whereas unhappier people tend to be isolated and preoccupied and preoccupied with their problems because they're unhappy. And so it's really worthwhile, you know, even if it were selfish to be happy, we should be happy if only for selfless reasons, because the research really shows that happier people tend to live more productive, more connected lives.
Yeah, it gets so complicated when you mine down into these details, you know, parsing what it means to be happy and unhappy, and is it healthy to be happy? But it's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, I feel better when I'm happy. I imagine you too, and living your life's purpose and something you want for your daughters, and I want for my children as well. So
some people assume that my goal or like my vision of a good life is for somebody to be totally happy 100% of the time. And that's just not true. I don't think that's possible. It's not realistic. And it would not even be a good life to be happy 100% of the time. There's many occasions where it's totally appropriate to be feeling sad or angry or resentful or righteous indignation. These negative emotions are really important. But I do think that we might as well be as happy as we can be given our circumstances. And for a lot of us, there's a lot of low-hanging fruit. There's a lot of things well within our reach that would make us happier. And it just seems like, well, why not do those things? And it's not as if you want to kid yourself into thinking that you should be skipping down the street when your mother's in the hospital, but are there things that you can do to deal with the situation so that you're as happy as you can be given what's going on in your life? Because I think sometimes people think, well, it's just totally unrealistic to be happy all the time, so it's a silly thing to think about. Well, it's not that it's supposed to be all the time and in all situations. It's just like, why not be as happy as you can be?
Yes, sort of like the perfect balance of a meal. You don't want too much of anything. You want this balance. And to me, that's what happiness is that balance, finding that balance between, you know, I don't want to be cranky all the time. I don't want to be anything all the time.
And here's a weird thing, too, is that happiness doesn't always make you feel happy. And sometimes we do things that make us happy in certain ways, but they also are they also give us a lot of negative emotions. For instance, I knew a guy who had a really, really awful father. He had a very bad relationship with him to the point where two of his siblings refused to have any contact with their father. And their father was in the hospital. And so my friend was like going and visiting him, and he hated it. He hated going to the hospital. He didn't like his father. His father's always been a jerk to him. And he's like, why am I going? It's like, does not make me happy. And I said, well, the thing is, it seems like this is your idea of what it means to be a good son. You want to do the right thing, even to this father who, you know, wasn't a great father. And so in a way, this is what makes you happy because you're living your values. It's not something that is fun. You know, it's not making you feel good, but it's making you happy in a different way. So happiness isn't always, you know, it's not always pleasurable, but that doesn't mean that it's not the thing that is going to give us the most, you know, satisfaction over the long run of our lives.
Right. Sort of like this soup of happiness, the different ingredients. It just strikes me it's got a food metaphor, this happiness thing. One of my favorite parts of the book is the fact that novelty and challenge are powerful sources of happiness. What does that mean? Can you give us an example?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because this is something that came as a big surprise to me. Because the research consistently shows that novelty and challenge bring happiness, and that people who do new things tend and go new places, meet new people, learn how to do new skills. I mean, even things like going to a new restaurant, as simple as that, tend to be happier than people who don't. Now, I was like, well, that's what the research shows, but that's not going to be true for me because I'm one of these people who loves familiarity and mastery. I eat the same food every day. I rarely leave my neighborhood. Like, all I do basically is reading and writing. So I'm not a well-rounded person. I'm not an adventurous person. But I had to test it for the purposes of my project. I had to put this to the test. So I decided to test it by starting a blog, which to me was enormously novel and very challenging. I'm super untechy. I knew nothing about blogging. I didn't know anybody who had a blog. I had never been a journalist, so I always wrote long books, not like little daily pieces. So everything about it felt off and hard and weird and made me feel stupid and insecure and frustrated as I was trying to figure out how to do it. But then what did I find out? Oh my gosh, it's a huge engine of happiness for me. I learned all these new skills. I have this new identity as a blogger. I've gotten so much out of this, and I realized that a lot of it is because it was novel, it was challenging. And by pushing myself to do it, I just got this huge boost of happiness. And so, but the thing about it is that it's just like happiness doesn't always make you feel happy. Novelty and challenge often make you feel, you know, anxious, insecure, you know, like an idiot. You don't know what to do. You know, you feel out of place or uneasy because you're the new person or the one that is not good at doing something or is hesitant about doing something, but then in the end, there can be a huge payoff. And you know, and even things like walking through a new neighborhood or checking out a store or a museum that you've never gone before or going out of your way to try to make a new friend, joining a group with a lot of people that you don't know. All these things it's surprising how much they really do boost happiness.
So interesting. Now, here's sort of the million-dollar question. Can money help buy happiness?
Well, you know, it's funny. Money is probably one of the most complicated and emotionally charged issues within the subject of happiness. And I would say, no, money cannot buy happiness, but it can buy many things that contribute powerfully to happiness. And the thing about money that's interesting is it affects us more in the negative and the positive. So in that way, it's like health. Once you have your health, once you have enough money and it's not a constant worry to you, you sort of take it for granted or you forget about it. It fades into the background. But when you don't have enough, when you don't have enough money, when you don't have your health, it really weighs you down. So it's a bigger weight than it is a lift. And it also very much depends on how you spend your money. So for instance, one of the most robust findings, ancient philosophers and contemporary scientists would agree that the key to happiness is relationships. So if you spent your money, let's say you had your money and you're like, I'm going to spend money going to my college reunion. I'm going to spend money to throw a party for my sister's birthday. I'm going to spend money sending out holiday cards so I stay in touch with everybody. I'm going to spend money on a camera so I take pictures of everybody that I love and I can have pictures around me of all the people that are important to me. Those things would probably increase your happiness. But if you're spending your money on cocaine, if you're spending your money on your 15th pair of boots that you're never going to wear, it's not. A different purchase means something different. So let's say there's a really expensive set of kitchen knives. A person who cooks every day, those kitchen knives could be a source of joy every time. Well-made tools make work a joy. And so that might just be the best thing they'd ever bought. But then another person might buy the expensive ones just to sort of as a kind of furniture to make their kitchen look fancier. And they just sit in the corner and nobody ever uses them. Well, they're not going to get much satisfaction. You know, it's going to fade out of the woodwork and they're never going to think about them again. So that's not going to bring them happiness. So it's really like, how are you spending it? To what end are you spending it? And you know, what kind of person are you? About how is that money going to contribute to your happiness?
Very good answer to a complicated question for sure.
Yeah.
So the next question is, what small things did you do that made all the difference?
Oh, there's so many. Well, one of them is to get enough sleep. I'm just like a sleep zealot. It's interesting. They've done all these studies that show we adjust to being sleep deprived. So people who are sleep deprived don't realize how far off their kind of natural game they are. But then when scientists study them, they're quite impaired. And so people will say, oh, well, I've trained myself to get by on 5 hours. But really, most adults need at least 7 hours of sleep. And this is just if you feel overwhelmed, if you feel drained, if nothing feels fun, if you can't make decisions, what time are you going to bed? I mean, that's always the first question I ask of anybody. It's like, are you getting enough sleep? Because that is just a key thing. A very small thing that I did, which I write about in Happier at Home, which is another book I wrote about happiness, which had a surprisingly large impact on the atmosphere of my household, is we made a family resolution that we would all give warm greetings and farewells, because everybody was just sort of grunting out a hello and goodbye. And now every time somebody comes and goes, we get up, come to the door, and really greet them or say goodbye. And that has completely changed the atmosphere of my house because everybody seems so much more attentive. But there's one resolution that it sounds so trivial, it sounds silly, but this is the number one resolution that people mention to me as something that has really changed their happiness. And again, it's not the most important thing you could do for your happiness, but it does seem to be something that works for a lot of people, and that's to make your bed. So many people say that making their bed, it starts the day right, they have this little accomplishment, their bedroom looks neater. So many people say, you know, that's what I do differently now, and it makes me so happy.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, we can all make our bed and give warm hugs and kisses.
And here's another thing that effectively didn't affect me so much, but many people have told me has transformed their lives. One of the things that constantly surprises me is how much outer order contributes to inner calm. But I follow something called the one-minute rule. So anything that I can do in less than a minute, I do without delay. So if I can hang up a coat, if I can put a dish in the dishwasher, if I can print out a document and file it, if I can read a letter and throw it away, if I can carry a cup from one room to another, do it without delay. And what this does is it removes that scum of clutter from life, And because I think what happens is that we feel overwhelmed and drained by all this, just like all these, this multitude of tiny tasks. But when you just look around and you see just like a million things that you need to do, you just feel like, oh my gosh, I can't even do anything. And when you get rid of just those really easy ones that don't take any time or effort to knock off, then that kind of that noise goes quieter, and you feel calmer and more energetic because you have counter space. And you can find what you're looking for, and you know, you don't have to hunt around for your keys, or you know, you get your phone charged because your phone charger is in the right place. So the 1 minute rule is something that has been very helpful, I think.
That is amazing, and these are all great tips for entrepreneurs, which is the sidebar to the main feature that we'll be writing about you this month. And in addition, I want to tell our listeners and our readers that Gretchen has given us permission to, starting in January, post a column every month that tracks her happiness project, or tracked it, and then gives you something that you can use as a guide. So we'll just be using her book and encouraging our readers and listeners to get happier. How do we start our own happiness project, first and foremost? Tell us what you did specifically, how you chunked it out, and especially for small business owners who are so easily overwhelmed because the world rests on their shoulders and they feel that way.
Well, I do think that a great place to start is with your own body. Because your physical experience always is going to color your emotional experience. And especially if you're, starting up something, it's easy just to like run yourself ragged and burn yourself out. So getting enough sleep, getting a little bit of exercise, not training for a marathon, just like going for a 20-minute walk, especially if you can do it outside, is just going to give you a lot more energy. It's going to keep you alert. Making sure that you don't let yourself get too hungry. A lot of times people who have very bad eating habits, when people get hungry, their self-control drops. So paradoxically, one of the things that you can best do to help yourself eat more healthfully is to not get hungry. Because when you let yourself get hungry, that's when you're just like going to eat that giant bag of potato chips. Do what you have to do so that you don't let yourself get too hungry. So your body is a pretty universal place to start. But then from then, I think you really have to take a little time and think about, well, what do you want to see different in your life? Like, are you feeling distanced from the people who are the most important to you? Do you feel like you never have any time for yourself? Do you feel like you just work all the time and you never have any fun? Do you feel like you're wasting all your time on things that don't matter? Do you feel like there's no transcendent quality to your life, that you've lost touch, you know, your spiritual life or like the more grand and eternal matters of life? You know, think about, well, what do you feel like is missing, or what do you want more of? Is there something that you think, oh my gosh, every time I do this, it's so wonderful, but I never do it? Well, why don't you do it? Could you do it more? Like, really think about what you want more of and what you want less of, and then really to identify concrete, manageable steps to get there. A lot of times I think when people want to do a happiness project, they set up what they think is a specific goal, but it's actually pretty abstract. Like, be more mindful. Okay, that's very abstract. What does that mean? Like, how do you know, you go to bed at the end of the day, how do you know if you've been more mindful? You know, you need to turn it into something very concrete. Like, for 10 minutes every morning after breakfast, I will meditate. Or for 15 minutes when I get home from work, I'm just going to sit down, close my eyes, and think about, you know, my day and the day to come, or whatever it might be. Or I'm going to have an app on my phone that chimes to remind me to be mindful. For me, having an app that chimes would not make me more mindful. It would drive me crazy, but this is something that a lot of people say works for them. So it's like, well, what are those concrete, manageable things? Or something like eat more healthfully. What does that mean? Turn it into something very specific, something very concrete. Eat more healthfully might be eat breakfast every day, pack a lunch and take it instead of eating out every day, eat a salad for dinner every night, give up candy, whatever it would be for you. So to be very concrete and to keep it something that you can really check yourself. Are you doing this or are you not doing this? Being more loving, networking more. Those are too vague. You know, it needs to be twice a week I will make a lunch date with someone with whom I want to network, or I am going to start a group of like-minded people so that we can discuss our workplace challenges, or, you know, whatever. I'm going to sign up for 3 newsletters that are going to keep me up to date with all the latest research, or whatever it might be, but to be very concrete with yourself.
That is great advice and definitely manageable. So we're going to help our readers and listeners with the Happiness Project. They're creating their own as throughout 2015. So before we let you go, one last question. What are you working on now?
Oh, I am so excited. My next project is a book called Better Than Before, Mastering the Habits of Our Everyday Lives. It comes out in March. I'm doing all my happiness research. What I found is that when I talk to people, when they were talking about their happiness challenges, they very often pointed to a habit they were struggling with to either make or break. And so I became very interested in this question of like, well, when can people, like how and when do people change their habits? Because sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, but you know, how and why does this happen? And it turns out this is just so rich and fascinating a subject that I decided, again, I'm going to write a whole book about this and really figure this out. And so it's really about the question of really, how do we change our habits? I found 21 different strategies that people can use. And obviously, they don't all work for everybody. But then often what I found is that when you look at somebody who's changed an important habit, they might have combined, even without knowing it, 5 or 6 strategies all at once. And that's what allowed them to make an important change in a habit.
Well, it sounds like you're taking the happiness concept and going even deeper. I love that idea.
Yeah.
Put us on the press list so we can interview you again when that book comes out.
Yeah, excellent.
My last question is, so after all of this work and research and all these great books that are bestsellers, are you happier than you were before?
It's interesting because my fundamental nature is the same. Like, I'm still Gretchen, and on a 1 to 10 scale, I score as a 7. That's just sort of my nature, but my experience of my life is so much happier because I've done so much work to give myself more fun, more friends, more enjoyment, more enthusiasm, more love. I have a lot more friends because of a lot of things that I did. And then I also have less guilt, less remorse, less anger, less resentment because I've done a lot of things to get rid of, you know, behavior or things in my life that caused me to have those negative emotions. And then, of course, it's enormously satisfying to have felt like, oh, I wrote something that resonated with a lot of people. So that itself is an engine of happiness for me. So absolutely. And now my habits also. I've got a lot of good new habits, too. But the thing is, all the stuff I talk about, it doesn't take a lot of time, energy, or money, which nobody has. It's all, you know, you don't have to fly across the world. You don't have to go on a 10-day meditation retreat. I mean, some people love to do that. I love to hear about other people doing it. But the stuff I talk about is like the ordinary day. It's just what a regular person who's running as fast as they can. It's just stuff you can do as part of your ordinary day. And it's really surprising what a difference I think it can make. A lot of us have things well within our reach that we can do that will really significantly boost our happiness.
Excellent. I love that idea. And we'll just keep following up with you and trying to help other people find that sweet spot in their lives. So thank you for your time, Gretchen Rubin.
Thank you.
So we'll stay in touch. You are listening to Incandescent Radio Network, The Entrepreneur Show, and you are listening to Gretchen Rubin, The Happiness Project. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks.
So that's it for today's Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, where we always ask, what's your story? If you have a good one and would like to be interviewed on the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show, send me an email to hope@hopegibbs.com. Check back every Monday at noon for a new episode of the Incandescent Entrepreneur Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, www.incandescentradio.com. We look forward to talking to you next week. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.